welcome back to This Week on Channel 9.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And I'm Brian Keller. And we're filming a little late this week, Dan.
That's right. We're filming over the weekend because of a snowpocalypse here.
That's right, which has turned into slushpocalypse as everything's melting away. But yeah, literally it shut down campus for several days in a row. I couldn't get to work.
I had 10 inches of snow in my house.
Yeah, but in other news, I will say that the inside of a Tauntaun is surprisingly roomy. I was really impressed.
Yes, I love this. So this is a Photoshop, of course, of I think that's the Space Needle there, and this is basically how people are surviving in downtown Seattle, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice that we have a good population of Tauntauns running around and lightsabers at every corner that you can just slice one open and crawl into.
So they're not a hotel, for God's sakes.
Well, you know.
Anyway. which we actually do have real stuff, which
is... I have nothing to say to that. Big week. Yeah, this is really cool.
So first thing is the beta of Visual Studio Achievements was finally released, and we've had a ton of downloads. You know, for people who don't know, this started out as a thread on Reddit on, you know, what if Visual Studio had achievements, and we said, you know, what would be really cool is if we actually built this. So we started looking at the system for Visual Studio Extensibility, and I wrote the first spec on this, and the idea is we could actually listen and use FXCOP to monitor what people are doing.
Mm-hmm. It's super cool, and I'm slowly watching my place on the leaderboard slip away, because I was one of the original internal beta testers. I got the number one spot. I'm very proud of that. But it's super cool. I love some of the achievements. One of them is called Go to Hell, for example. So if you use GoTos, which I actually had forgotten that C# does support GoTos.
Sure.
But some really creative ones. A lot of those came straight from the community, and it's super, super cool. I love it.
Yeah, so, you know, we're always looking for feedback on this, and some people say you guys should do more positive ones, and rather than encouraging best practices, or if you see a bad practice, tell somebody how to fix it and stuff like that. So there's a lot of feedback, and I'm sure we'll be taking that. And kudos to Karsten and Duncan McKenzie's team for doing all the integration work.
Yeah, it's awesome. It was really, really cool to start playing with this. So I'd encourage anyone who hasn't already to download that and check it out. Yeah.
Cool. So our next story here is the 101 Async Sample. So this is Lucian Wyszyk. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind this is it's actually a Silverlight application here that shows examples that you can run using async, and they're available in both C# and VB. So, for example, if you want to do serial programming, like do this, or if you want to do things in parallel, or if you want to do things like wait for the first one to finish, or doing control flow, so it's like do this, then do this, then do this. Do the equivalent of thread.sleep using delay. Just a number of things that you're looking to do for async. These are great, simple examples that show you how to use them.
And what I love about this is that async itself, I mean, they've made it so easy within the framework and within C# and Visual Basic to take advantage of. I think the real trick of it is coming up with examples in your own projects where you can think that could benefit from async. So just by browsing through these examples, you can say, oh, okay, that's a really great example of how I can improve the user experience or whatever just by using async.
Yeah, and, you know, the obvious ones are like File.io, Network.io, where you already have to, you know, depending on your platform, say Windows Phone, already have to do some background processing and stuff like that.
Yep. And like you said a few weeks ago, I really like how Windows 8 is pushing you towards async and a lot of the default ways that you'll create your applications.
For people that have used Windows 8 APIs already, it is an async API, so you're going to have to learn them if you're building Windows 8 apps.
Yep, which is great for the user. So I really like this one. It's a great how-to on how to create your own ray tracer using Windows Azure. And I love this example. If you're not familiar with the concept of ray tracing, it's a very processor-intensive operation where you're taking several 3D objects in space and you're looking at various light sources and reflective values, and you're trying to calculate a scene. And so you can imagine that for a movie, for example, like at Pixar, they're actually going to start using Windows Azure. They announced that last year, I believe, to start doing a lot of their ray tracing because you don't always have the horsepower underneath your desk, and you don't want to invest in these expensive server farms on-premise. You want to take advantage of the cloud to be able to use that elastic scale. And so this is kind of ray tracing for the rest of us. If we're not Pixar, how do you actually push that up to the cloud and benefit from that elastic scale and then scale it back down when you're not using it? So I thought this was a really cool sample.
Yeah, and David's always got cool samples. You know, he's the one that did that lightsaber Kinect demo.
Oh, right. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah.
Which brings us to our next thing, which is an event flashback. So this is the ALM Summit, Scott Guthrie on Azure and Unplugged. So one of the things I really like about Scott here is he really wanted to make it a user-driven session. So he takes out Notepad and says, what do you guys want to hear about? So, you know, you'll hear his thoughts on Silverlight, where Azure's going, user experience, developer services on the cloud, and you kind of, I think that's one of the coolest parts of having somebody at Scott's level that says, listen, what do you guys want to hear? What do you guys want to talk about today?
Yeah, this is really great. And Azure on-premises, which is a big thing that a lot of people are really exciting about. They mentioned TFS on Azure. And
BI in the cloud. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. So it's really good listening to Scott. I think Scott keeps it real. He's not one of these, you know, PR spin machines like a lot of other companies has. He's a developer. He's in the trenches, and he knows what we care about.
So cool stuff.
Yeah. And this is another one I like. So this guy, Rasmus, I've been emailing with him over the last several months, helping him out as he kind of learns coded UI tests. And I really love this about our development community out there, that sometimes when you're working with complex coded UI tests, you start having these multiple UI map files, and they can start to become out of sync, and you can start to have duplicate of code across one UI map to the other. Mm-hmm. And so he actually said, I can solve this problem. And he went out and built a tool, and he shipped it to CodePlex that can make it really a lot easier for you to maintain these complex UI maps and complex coded UI tests as you start scaling those up for your application. So congratulations to Rasmus. I think this is really, really cool.
Sweet. Cool stuff. So this is a Pete Brown post. It's actually kind of a two-part post because he did have an update on it, but it's specifically talking about observable collection and the cross-thread change notification. So when you're the idea being that if you say, for example, do updates on the UI thread versus the background thread, then how do you sync those back and do it across different threads so you don't get that thread notification exception. One of the things, and he goes through some of the new support in WPF 4.5 for that, but one of the things to keep in mind, though, is his update to the post where, and this is why it was a great post, he actually went to the person who built the feature, the specific class, that allows you to set the binding options for this, and talked about what is available for collections. And basically, in his follow-up post, he talks about for collection synchronization, you still need to do that. And he gives a couple different examples on how to do that. So, like, if you're doing it, so you can imagine you can get into a weird situation where two threads are trying to update something, you really need to lock it. Mm-hmm. And gives the example code, and that's not automatically built into observable collection. And he talks about some of the issues why, and or at least at a high level, on why that wasn't done in the framework as well. So if you're interested in new features for binding for WPF 4.5, this is kind of a must-read.
Okay. 10 things ASP.NET developers should know about web.config inheritance and overrides. Now, is this specific to .NET 4.5 as well, or is this just web.config inheritance in general?
It's kind of specific to IIS 7, but also some new features in ASP.NET 4 that people may not be familiar with. Mm-hmm. So it's John Galloway.
Yep.
So you know, another friend of the show. John talks about some of the different things that you need to keep in mind in terms of web.configs. And one of the features that I didn't know in some of the refactoring things that they had done, like just to give you one example, like in ASP.NET 4, they moved a bunch of the handlers that used to be in the web config that's now in the machine config. He has the chart of how things happen with machine config, with IIS settings, and how they apply to your web config, so you can understand that. If you don't like certain settings, you can basically set a property that I didn't know, which is that says this should not be inherited by my children. So if you have one web config for an ASP.NET app and you don't want it to be inherited by web config in a subdirectory, you can set that property. Hmm. Another really cool one is normally you'd build that web config because you want just that folder to have certain settings. You can actually use, and I didn't know this even existed, a location element in your web.config, and then say location. In this directory, this is our upload folder, we're going to allow really big files. In fact, he has an example that does just that. So just a lot of things about you know, web.config. It goes into deployment, debug, release, and all the stuff within there. So kind of a must read.
Yeah, I have to say, that's what you just said is 10 times more than I knew about web.config. I think all I know is how to switch debug and release and flip that around. so that's really cool to know that post is out there. Thanks, John. So what I love about this post from Jason Zander is it's really kind of a State of the Union update. And, you know, there's always so much going on in the Microsoft development ecosystem that it can be easy to lose track of everything. And so I really like Jason's perspective. He kind of takes a stand back and says, all right, here's what's going on in terms of, you know, new things you need to know across ASP.NET or Roslyn or all the different things that kind of fall under the developer division world. And so I think this is a really good post. I think Soma does a great job of that as well. So sometimes it's easy to become lost in the weeds and look at the really specific 400-level web.config blog post and kind of lose sight of the overall roadmap of where we're headed. So I like these posts.
Yeah, and, you know, he talks about Roslyn. I am so excited about Roslyn, and that's one of the things we're definitely looking at for Visual Studio Achievements, just to tie that back in.
Yeah, of course. Because I can see that's really handy.
Having that will make our lives so much easier in terms of the things that we can do.
Right.
So.
And I imagine that would probably allow you to extend the services beyond C Sharp and Visual Basic, potentially?
Unfortunately, Roslyn is not doesn't work in C++.
Oh, okay, sure.
So,
yeah, of course.
So, but again, you know, hopefully the C++ team, and Charles is a big advocate for the C++ team. Mm-hmm. He actually wants to see us to find a way to do Visual Studio Achievements. The challenge with doing Visual Studio Achievements, and again, when we looked at the amount of work that we had for that specific project, mm-hmm. we actually said, rather than building our own language parser and all this stuff, we're going to make it compile time, or we're going to use regular expressions. Mm. It was sort of the easiest way to go. There's a tool called StyleCut that lets you look at source code, C# only. So I think the community would be complaining if it was C# only and not Visual Basic. So we went with that. And FXCop was a big tool that we reused, and we're actually sending the compile code to FXCop and writing FXCop rules. So that's actually how an achievement is basically an FXCop rule. But without an infrastructure like FXCop for C++, you're basically almost recreating an IntelliSense, which is a difficult process to do.
Got it. I thought they did have an FXCop for C++, like prefast and
Again, we reached out to folks, and it just didn't seem like it was.
All right. Well, let's stop doing our feature design on the show.
Yes.
And jump to picks of the week.
So, picks of the week!
So my pick of the week is from a friend of mine, Gary Pretty. And I met him actually a few months ago in Madrid, where he was presenting this awesome HTML5 application. And it's funny, if you open up this HTML5 application, it's called Microfinance. It's just kind of a generic sample application. I found myself like right-clicking all over the place. I'm like, all right, where's the embedded Flash? Where's the embedded Silverlight? You know, and it's not. It's all HTML5. You know, you can crack open the source. You can see the JavaScript behind there and kind of understand how it works. And he just wrote a case study about it where he talks about the various components and the technologies that he picked. And it's just awesome. You've got to check this thing out. He uses a lot of Windows Azure, ASP.NET, Windows Phone behind the scenes. And
labs@mandogroup.com?
Sorry?
labs@mandogroup.com.
Right, exactly. That's the company he works for. And Gary's one of these guys that we all envy. He's got the developer side and the designer side going at the same time, which is just the perfect killer combination. And super nice guy as well. Mm-hmm. So nice to see that coming out there.
Cool. So my post is actually one from Scott Hanselman, which I love this, which was the abusing the Microsoft Research Touch Mouse Sensor API SDK with the console-based heat map. Scott's been talking about the Microsoft Touch Mouse, which gives you almost like a touch surface that you can play with. Mm-hmm. And with the release of the SDK that he learned from Long Zen, what you can actually do is, it comes with C++ and C# APIs, is actually read in data like where your fingers are positioned. So he actually does a heat map based on where, you know, how your fingers press and does some console coloring.
That's awesome. That's like futuristic and like very ancient technology.
Vintage software.
Vintage. That's a better word. When I first saw console-based, I wasn't even thinking about console applications. I was thinking, oh, okay, he's built something for the Xbox,
oh,
right? Nice, I don't
Xbox.
Even think about console anymore, right?
Oh, that's funny.
So that's super, super cool.
Awesome. So kudos to that, and that's our show.
All right. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.